Oh, the Deadwood stages are rolling on over the plains, with the curtains flapping and the driver a-slapping the reins. A beautiful sky, a wonderful day. Whip, crack away, whip, crack away, whip, crack away.
Hello and welcome to Sister Act. This is a podcast where two sisters talk about movie musicals. I am one of those sisters. My name is Jackie.
I am the other one. My name is Nicola.
And today we are talking about a movie that Nick had seen once before, but I had never heard of, Calamity Jane.
Yeah, I really like this movie.
I found it, unfortunately, too racist. But
yeah, I can see that.
It stopped even, like, mattering, which just made it, like, at first I was like, whoa. And then it kind of chilled out. But then it felt even weirder. It was like, if this isn't a part of the story, why is it a part of the texture of the world that, like, the first thing we learn mm-hmm. is...
Yeah. I did have a feeling. I was like, if I didn't watch this in a class where, like, there was a lot of context and, like, a specific way that I was, like, taught to view it, I, too, probably would have been really held up by the... racism of it all, but it was like not something, you know, that we even talked about really. So
really, that's interesting because the non-verbal Sue, like in the scene with what's his name, Francis, in the stagecoach, I was like, oh no, this is just like the texture of the world.
It was like immediately in that scene I was like, oh my god, I forgot about all the racism in this movie. It wasn't something that had stuck with my memory of it. But yes, there is a lot.
Yeah. But, you know, the queer stuff, I'm sure, is interesting.
Yes, I watched this in gay and lesbian theater and film, or whatever that class was called. So we talked about the lesbianism and the gender roles of it all and the gender performance.
Yeah. You know, it's like interesting, but it also feels very 1950s musical to me. You know, the guy at the beginning doing drag, it's like, what a classic wacky situation that someone gets into in a golden age of Hollywood musical where they have to dress up like a woman. And the heterosexuality is like, you know, it does feel like two leading ladies, one's kind of a butch and the other's extremely traditionally femme. Like, it has a little bit of the, what's the Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend movie?
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes.
Gentlemen Prefer Blondes energy.
It didn't feel like... Well, neither of them were really butch.
Yeah, but, you know, the one
who... It was
who...
one that was a serial monogamist and one that was a serial polygamist.
but the brunette one is supposed to be, like, you know, the way that they talk about... for sure, like, her wearing... there's just, like, something to be said about the amount of sequences in which she's wearing pants and, like, dressed like a man, and the sequence where Katie Brown thinks that she is a man. Like, all of that is different from what I'm used to watching from this era, but the, like, two traditionally beautiful women, but one of them is, like, understood narratively to be this ideal of femininity, and the other one is, like, in her shadow, but has confidence in her, like, isn't, like, you know, in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, it's not like the brunette wants to be Marilyn Monroe, but she understands, like, people don't see me in the same way they see Marilyn. Even though they're both equal, they're just like two extremely feminine traditional beauties.
Yeah.
You talk about your feelings about this because you talked about it with like teachers and stuff. I'm sure you have more interesting thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, it is something like that class that I took was really not what I was expecting because it was a lot of films that have absolutely no queer text and was like, oh, this is how, like, you could read queer subtext in these, like, classic films.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of just, when I watch this movie, I'm in the mindset of like, the subtext is the text. We can just say, yes, they're lesbians and enjoy it. In a way that I'm like, yeah, of course, if I didn't watch it in that class, I would be like, this is still pretty heteronormative. But I do, it's definitely...
Yeah, I mean, honestly, to me, there's something more interesting about... I don't really see her as a lesbian because she clearly has a crush on the lieutenant guy the whole time. And like...
But he sucks. Like,
it doesn't... Oh, for sure, he sucks.
The thing about the song Secret Love is like, you know, one plus one. To me, that can very easily be read as like, my had my lesbianism so deep down, and now I can sing it from the highest hills. Like, it was secret even to me. I thought I loved that dumb guy. And now technically she's saying, oh, but really I loved Bill. But it's like, you know, I feel like there is... It's definitely one of the easier movies that we watched in that class for me to say, oh yeah, the subtext is the text. Like, other things, like Streetcar Named Desire, actually Blanche DuBois is a gay man. It was like, that's not really reading to me. But this, I was like, yeah, they're lesbians.
Yeah, to me, it's like, oh, there's so much imagery and it's so evocative of lesbians in particular ways, but I did feel like narratively the relationship between her and Bill, it's just, if there had been a song between the two women where they were like, we're so different, we're completely incompatible or whatever, like, then I would be like, oh, this is gay. Like, that to me, that would be the subtext making this gay. If there had been a song between them that was like, you do this and I do that, we're completely different, how about that? But instead, you know, like, that's when she and Bill sang that song, you're like, they're gonna end up together. Like, that's such a trope of the genre that to me, like, signifies that's gonna be the shape of this love story. So because they hit all the beats of like love stories in that genre for me, I do kind of buy at the, like, I don't feel like she's singing actually about Katie, even though I see that, like, I understand how that could be the subtext. To me, it's like so perfectly hitting, and the character, like, sometimes I feel like you watch something that feels gay where it's like the desires of, like, these characters just don't feel like they're acting like the characters that they were before because these characters act so gay throughout this. And she kind of does, she feels very like butch and she feels kind of trans to me, but she doesn't really feel like a, like, there's no moment where I feel like she actually loves Katie because all of her sort of narrative energy is pointing towards she's going to end up with Bill.
Even that scene where she hops off a horse and climbs into the carriage, it's like the big climax of the film is not anything to do with Bill. It's like, I gotta get my woman back.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels a little gay. But not, I don't know. I do sort of still buy that she, like, the actual narrative purpose of the scene, that she's, like, apologizing to Katie, because she does, like, make a big stink. In some ways, it's still tangled up in the Bill and Danny of it all, you know, for me.
But the way they look at each other in that scene, I don't know. It feels gay to me.
Yeah, and she's wearing pants in that scene. There is something kind of, like, cool and subversive to me about the fact that she is still in the, like, that in that final scene, she is wearing pants and riding a horse and being still her, like, expressing her gender. And that guy is like, gender.
I don't know what type of life you're gonna live, but it sure will be interesting.
Yeah. And then at the end, she's sitting next to him in the same position she was at the beginning, on top of the carriage. Well, like she never goes inside the stagecoach. Yeah. Like, yeah, she feels to me like she stays true to her gender identity throughout, which is cool.
As much as there is gay subtext, it's not even really why I like this movie a lot. I do really like the relationship between Bill and Kalam. And that's what I, so like the structure of the course that I took was like, every time we would watch a movie, then we would have to do like a screen cap homework where we like choose a scene or a still and then write like a little thing about it. And the thing I wrote was about the scene where they like get together, where he's like, who are you to tell anyone how, who to love? And then it just, it's so like not really romantic, you know? The first time they kiss, they're talking about how they thought other people were so attractive. It's just like they their relationship is built on like a foundation of just like mutual understanding, and there's like almost nothing romantic about it. And it makes me think of the scene that was the only scene in My Best Friend's Wedding that I really liked at the very end, where her gay friend calls her and is like, oh, you know, like, I don't remember what he says, but he's like, you don't have that guy, but you have me, and maybe we won't have sex, but sure, our life will be really interesting together. I don't know. It, like, there's something very platonic and just great in their relationship to me. And it's definitely my favorite Howard Keel role.
Yes, that a huge...
By a mile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Because this is the first time I've ever seen him not, like, feel like a supervillain.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me want to watch, like, Annie Get Your Gun. I'm curious if just Showboat and Seven Brides for Seven Brothers is, like, his two most evil roles, and there's more sort of like likable stuff, but I really did find him likable in this. He still has that voice that's like so not what like a heartthrob sound like today.
And that all is of kind his of fun songs me, to me are kind of like snooze. Like their little duet about how we don't like each other is very much like skippable.
And a lot of the songs here just felt like these are the alternative versions of existing songs. Like, it felt like they were singing,
I
Everything's
Can Do
Up
Without
to Date
You
in
was...
Kansas City. Oh. Yeah, and...
was,
yeah,
a song from Annie Get Your Gun.
Yeah.
Anything You Can Do.
Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better. Yeah.
But, yeah, I liked when he was not singing in this movie.
Yeah. He also, it was my first time seeing him without facial hair, and it took me, I was like, that's
Howard
Keel?
The no mustache really makes him much more charming to me.
Oh, I was like, your face looks, like,
he does
rounder
look really
and longer
different.
Than I expect. Yeah, it was just, I was like, am I looking at the right man? Should we describe what happens in this movie?
So we start, I do like the music that Howard Keel doesn't sing, I really like. Whip, crack, away.
I didn't have any issues with it.
Whip, crack, away.
Oh, yeah. I did actually wake up this morning with that stuck in my head. Yeah, we open with, we meet Calamity Jane. She is a, we get no explanation for how she came to be who she is, but she's like an Annie Oakley kind of figure. She's like a.
Yeah, Calamity Jane is a real person.
Yes.
So
I did learn that looking up the Wikipedia page for this.
Do you know
musical.
Her life story at all?
No.
Me neither. but
I did look up Bill Hickok did not fight for the Confederacy, which I was like, phew.
I didn't know that Bill Hickok was a real person.
He was. I mean, I don't think he was a great Union soldier, but he did, he was, he did seem to be only in the Union Army. but anyway, she's coming back.
I don't even know, what year is this movie taking place?
I mean, Westward Expansion is kind of right after the Civil War.
So yeah, she's...
And in part leading up to it, that's part of the like reason that the war happens, is like the Mexican-American War and stuff. James K. Polk's war. Anyway, she's a rootin' tootin' westward expansionist. She believes in manifest destiny. This movie is not going to at all interrogate the completely backwards ideology of westward expansion or manifest destiny. She's here to kill the Sioux Indians who live in their ancestral homelands, and that is morally right.
It is, like, really... Well, we're already going to get off recapping, but I just gotta say, that song, The Black Hills of Dakota, is just so crazy that she's like, wow, no wonder the Indians are fighting so hard to keep their land. Let's sing a song about how beautiful it is and not interrogate that it is their land that we are killing them on.
Yeah. Yes. Politically quite, a regressive film in some ways. Because it is 100 years after that happened when this is being made.
Yeah.
So we could apply a little bit more of a critical lens. But this is a kind of... You know what this also gave me vibes of was Crazy for You. Like, this kind of, like, Western musical does feel like a genre. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. They're very rarely... It's interesting to think about that as a... Like, even the existence of, like, Santa Fe as a dream place in multiple contemporary musicals is interesting. This, like, musical theater romanticization of the West. Interesting. Anyway. She's coming back. She goes into a bar. She's tough, and there's only men in this community, at least for the first half of the movie, and then inexplicably there's a bunch of women in the ensemble
later.
Well,
there are... So she's on a stagecoach with Rattlesnake singing this song about how she's going back to Deadwood and whip crack away. And then she comes back and there's a bunch of people who are like, Calamity, what did you bring back? And there's women there. And she's like,
oh, really?
A hat and some pearls. But then we don't, the women don't enter the theater, which is the main, like, set of this film.
And she tells Big Tall Tay, she kind of exaggerates her feats. She's mm-hmm. And Bill Hickok is suspicious that she's not totally honest. And she also implies that she has a big crush on Danny, the lieutenant. And then someone has some cigarettes for sale. And all the men go crazy for the cigarettes. And she's like, why is everyone so obsessed with these cigarettes? And Bill explains... Because
they want
a picture
the one
of a beautiful
with the picture
woman.
Of Adelaide Adams. And she's like, oh, this is just some girl in her underwear.
Yeah. And Bill Hickok says, you know, who has a picture of her in his wallet is the Lieutenant Danny that you're obsessed with. And she's like, how dare you?
When does the whole her going to save him happen?
So then some guys come in, they're like covered in dirt and soot, and she's like, what happened? And they're like, we were taken by Indians. And the they say that Lieutenant Danny was left behind, and they say he was probably dead, and she's like, you didn't even check, how dare you? And she runs off to go save him, and she does, she saves him, she brings just one horse. He's like, why are we sharing a horse? He doesn't like her.
Yeah.
He's
like,
so mean to her after he just...
this way. Yeah, he just is the worst. But anyway, all she does the same, like, making up tales again. Because she, like, shoots just, like, some warning shots and the Indians just run away. And then she unties him. But then when they're back in the theater, she's like, and I killed, like, five of them. Right, Danny? And he's like, what? Sure.
He doesn't even say sure. He will not lie for her. And then it's time. We've also discovered earlier in the movie, we saw a man named
Francis
Fryer came to he was in town. That's where you get this racist scene where he's sitting in a stagecoach and these unspeaking guys who are dressed like Indians come into his stagecoach and are just like touching him and his stuff in this like weird like oh, they've never seen a suitcase kind of way. I don't really know what's supposed to be happening there, but no one cares about this man.
It's very bizarre.
And then the owner of the theater realizes that this man is who he thought was a woman named Francis Fryer.
He's like, is there an actress in there? This is Mr. Miller. He owns the theater. And then Francis is like, no, it's just me. And he's like, I'm waiting for an actress from New York. And he's like, oh, that's me. But I'm not an actress. I'm a man. And then he's like, promised them an actress.
So yeah. Discover that he's made Francis Fryer dress up in drag. And Francis Fryer is going to go out and do a number. Because if he doesn't, if there's not a woman to perform, they're both going to be lynched. That's the fear.
Yeah, he's like, if I go out there dressed like a woman, they'll murder me. And he's like, well, they'll murder both of us if there's no woman out there. And then he sings a song that's like, I'm over 21 years old. I was like, well, that's nice. And he starts getting into it, but then a trombone player, like, catches his wig and it's going back and forth. So then everyone's like, what? And then they're all going to leave. They're like, ah, screw you, Millie. You said you had an actress. And then Clam is like, hey, everyone, this isn't his fault. We'll get an actress. We'll get Adelaide Adams. And they're all like, oh, Adelaide Adams. All right. But then Bill and Mr. Miller are like, why would you consider any other actress? And she's like, I don't know any other actress. But now she's got to go to Chicago to try to get Adelaide Adams.
So Adelaide Adams performs. She goes to Chicago. It's like she's never been outside of the Old West. So she's like confused by storefronts and statues.
She's eyeing the bustles of the ladies walking by, and it's like, oh, looking at women?
Or it's like, she's never seen a dress.
Yeah. But it's like, why haven't you seen a dress? There's other women in the town.
You gave them
pearls and hats. Whatever.
Yeah. So Adelaide Adams does her show, and then she's back with her maid. And she's like, oh, Chicago is so boring. I can't wait to go to Europe. And the maid is named Katie Brown. And she's like, hey, what if I did a little bit of singing? And Adelaide is like, oh, you're ugly. And Katie's like, So then Adelaide leaves. And Katie's like, I'm not ugly. She puts on one of Adelaide's dresses and starts performing.
Because Adelaide was like, you know what? You can just have all of them. I don't know, give them away or do whatever. They're stupid. I'm going to get nicer new ones in Europe. So now Katie has all the dresses. She puts one on and she starts singing It's Harry, I'm Planning to Marry, which is a song that we saw Adelaide singing on stage. And then Kalam just walks in and then she freaks out. And then...
And Katie freaks out because she thinks Calamity is a man.
A man.
Which is interesting to me because I thought that this movie was doing something I didn't love, where it's like, oh, women have this sense of who's a real woman that the men don't have. Like, Calamity is skeptical of Frances Fryer when she comes out in drag and she's like, I'll tell you one thing, she ain't, or whatever. And everyone else is like, an ugly lady, yay! And so then I was like, oh, like, women can sort of detect women, but men can't. But then...
Yeah, no, I don't think that's what that was about. I think Clam...
That's just sort of like a thing sometimes, I feel like, that like women have superpowers with each other. But here, yeah, Katie Brown is immediately like, you're a man.
I think it was maybe that she had... I don't know why it was specifically her that said it, but she is known to not really know anything about identifying women.
Right.
So,
but it
I
made
don't
think me
that's
think
what
that now she actually has a trans dar instead of it being her womanly superpowers, it's her gender nonconforming awareness, because a traditionally feminine woman had no idea that this gender nonconforming woman was a woman.
Katie's like, she says something. Oh. She says, Mr. Calam or Calamity or whatever your name is. And she's like, Mr., that you think I'm a man? And then she starts cracking up. And then she's like, actually, maybe that's not so funny. And then she's like, well, anyway, I'm here to take you to Deadwood. And there's the misunderstanding that because she's in the costume, Kalam thinks that...
And she's in the dressing room labeled Adelaide Adams, and yeah. She was singing an Adelaide Adams song.
She thinks that this is Adelaide Adams, as one would, because we saw her before see the show from very far away, and we got, like, her view, and it was just, like, bodies. You couldn't see any faces. And Katie realizes that this is the misunderstanding, but she wants to be a singer so badly that she is like, yes, I, Adelaide Adams, will go to Deadwood.
And she's like, you only have one picture of me that they've ever seen from the cigarette thing? Okay, I look enough like that. So she agrees to go. They go back to Deadwood. She's freaked out going the last 100 miles by stagecoach, but they get there safely. They're welcomed at the hotel. And Francis Fryer sees Adelaide Adams arrive and has seen Adelaide in person before. They were both in St. Louis at the same time. So he realizes what's going on. But everyone else is like, it's a beautiful woman. How could we be any the wiser about whether this is actually Adelaide?
And both Danny and Bill, as soon as she gets there, or like have one arm, they're like on either side of her, both very smitten. And Kalam is immediately like, oh, I shouldn't have brought her here. Now Danny doesn't like me. I'm like, girl, he never liked you, but I'm sorry. He's not worth it. And then they're like getting ready to perform. And
yeah, Francis, this was unexpected to me. Oh, Francis says, good luck out there, Katie. And yeah, Francis well, also
he,
tries
he
to...
Says, yeah, he says to Mr. Miller, oh, about Adelaide, I mean, no, it doesn't matter. We need a woman. Just don't say anything. It was like a very weird scene, Mr. Miller. Oh, and Mr. Miller goes, actors are so weird.
And then he tells Katie, good luck out there, Katie. And she's like, oh, God, this guy knows my deal. But he meant it genuinely. Mm-hmm. But then this is unexpected to me, that she does a kind of bad job. And she immediately just is like, I'm so sorry, I'm not Adelaide. Like, we don't get more. Like, she does not perform as Adelaide Adams, which is what I would have expected from this time period. Like, the tropes of this kind of musical. You would think she's Adelaide until Act 3. And then the real Adelaide comes to town and she's like... oops or whatever, like that's not what happens.
If
she's just immediately like, I'm so sorry, I lied.
Musicals of this time, though, it's that they never quite go the way you expect.
That's so true.
Everyone's like,
funny that they're like so tropey but also like hard
so
to predict.
Out of the box. But someone's
so
like,
she apologizes.
And she's like, I can't. I'm not Adelaide. I'm sorry. And then everyone starts freaking out. And they're all like freaking out at Kalam because she's like, what? Yes, it is. Oh, there's also some racist thing that happened before this that should we even discuss?
I don't even understand what it is. So we should discuss it if you can explain what's going on.
So I can't quite. I don't know why the hell he has a baby. That, I don't know. When they sing, which we also skipped over, they sing their song, I Can Do Without You, just about how, oh, we're friends, but we hate each other. Mm-hmm. As he's walking away, he says, hey, Kalam, if you get Adelaide Adams, I will dress up like a Native American. So that's why he's dressed up, because he said that he would, and he's a man of his word. But
and then there's three people with him.
I don't know who the baby is, but it's just very bizarre and very skippable.
And she keeps laughing at him.
Yeah.
But so then everyone's being so mean to Katie, and Calamity is like, hey, this is a beautiful woman who came to our town, so what if she's not Adelaide? Like, aren't we all here pursuing a dream? She's here pursuing hers. Let's give her a chance. And so then she tells Katie to perform again, but this time just do it as herself. And without having to pretend to be Adelaide, she's just is such a natural performer now, and she does a really good job, and she's dancing and kicking the hats off men's heads, and they love it, and they applaud and applaud. And now she's immediately a huge star.
Oh, we skipped another song, too.
That I guess we did
before this.
She sings "Everything's Up to Date in Chicago." it's a totally different song, and I do like it a lot. But I just there's a moment when they say
"pretty but ain't got what we've got."
Yeah, and but she says something about
"what did you see in Chicago," and she sings a song, and it's fun. But yeah.
And she does something where she's like, you push a button, you go up an elevator, and then
they
grab her hands and pull
her
up
to the balcony of the theater. Mm-hmm. Now Katie is a real hit. Then the next thing we see is she's getting in a little coach with Clam. Yeah. And Bill is like, hey, where are you going? Are you leaving so soon? You were so great. And she's like, oh, yeah, no, I'm staying. I'm just moving into the cabin with Clam. And Bill thinks this is just so funny. And then he goes inside. He's like, I don't need any liquor. I'm already high as a kite just from the idea of Clam and Katie being chaperones for each other. And he sees someone is, like, painting Katie for the theater, I guess, and he sings this song about how he loves Katie to this painting.
And then
we go to the cabin, and it's a mess. And Clam is like, yeah, I usually just sleep outside. I'm not a real woman. This is no place for you. I'll take you back to the hotel. And she's like, no, it just needs a woman's touch. And then they sing, a woman's touch, dee, 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 dee. And they fix it up, and it's like this adorable little cottage with the yellow door that they painted Clam and Katie on with flowers. And also, Clam gets a makeover, so now she dresses like a
woman. It's interesting, because I could see that this song for the gay subtext is like a peak of it, because it's them like caring for each other and dressing each other. For me, as someone who was more attuned, like felt like there was more substance to the like trans subtext, I did not like this number, because it was like Calamity does not at any point like say like, woo, thank you, I'm finally my true self, but she does just like take to being made over with a little bit more ease than I like want her to, like, I like there's less resistance than I would like to being told to like put on a dress. You know, like she goes to go the next scene, she's gonna go like check in on a neighbor who's sick, and she's just like wearing a dress, and she's not wearing shoes, so at least in some ways she's like not compromising. And Katie's like, oh, you're not wearing shoes. And she's like, well, I gotta cross the creek. But it's like, wouldn't it be easier in pants? Like, I just, like, now she's gotta be bustling up her dress. Like, I just feel like she would be rejecting the idea of having to wear a dress to continue on in her more masculine role in her community. But she's just like, oh, whatever. But in some ways, I kind of get that. Like, she's just like, whatever, I'll wear whatever. I didn't like seeing her be made to feminize her appearance. But I do like the subversion of it that happens when she falls in the creek.
Yeah. I don't know. It did feel like when we talked about it in class, it was like, oh, they're like cottage lesbians, so cute. And I was feeling a little more like you this time around. That's just like, I don't, like, how does she want to be more like feminized or like, I don't know.
I kind of don't think so. Like, I think that she wants to feel desired. Like I think that she is attuned to the ways that people pay more, like Katie more than her. But she, there's no moment, which I do appreciate, there's no moment where she, like, looks at her reflection and is like, wow, this was inside of me all along or something.
Yeah.
Like, she covers up the dress in the, like, so.
She's, yeah. Well,
Yeah, I guess just later she's wearing like a big coat over a big over a nice dress. Yeah. And part of that is just like narratively to construct this reveal where she takes off the coat and Bill is like, "What? I didn't even realize you were that's the same person." But to me it does imply like she does not care, like she's not like, "Oh, I found this new beautiful self. I need to reveal it." It's like she's like, "Okay, someone gave me different clothing, but I'm still going to put my coat over myself like normal."
Cuz the way that I think I read it is like she is really enjoying living with someone and cooking and cleaning together and like not living in a nasty abandoned cabin. And the clothes are pretty irrelevant to her. They don't change how she like behaves or perceives herself.
Yeah.
But she does put them on in a way that I would think that clothes are more important than that to people.
Yeah.
Usually, but I don't know.
And the way that she's being sort of like taught to maintain a home obviously is like, there's something about the song being like a woman's touch. Like there's something a little bit to me like needling about that, about like, oh, like you should be more like a woman. But the fact that Calamity doesn't really totally have that touch also like kind of affirms that her distance from womanhood, like she doesn't, she needs Katie to do, she couldn't do this by herself. She does not have a woman's touch.
Yeah, I feel like it's she doesn't really have a desire to be more feminine, but she has a desire to have like more women in her life or to like investigate her identity as a woman more, which is why like she wanted Katie to move in. Because she does give that whole speech when they walk in, like, "Oh, I shouldn't have thought that a woman would want to live here. Like, this is terrible." I don't know. It's an interesting song.
Yeah. Yeah, and it does feel to me relate, like, part of what she wants from Katie is, I think, like, to figure out how to be, like, desirable to the men she's attracted to. Because she does notice when they, like, look at the photo and bristle. Like, to her, it's like, this is just a woman in her underwear. But she sees that, like, this is something that these men want. Which is kind of why I like that Bill kisses her, that the first kiss with Bill is her dressed in her most sort of, like, mask outfit that she, like, her default clothing. Like, it does seem like he's marrying her for who she is and not for the image of femininity that is in the cigarette box.
Yeah, that's why. But so there's going to be this relationship.
Yeah, I agree. There's going to be this military ball. So Lieutenant Danny is going to go ask out Katie, and but he doesn't know where Katie's living.
Also, I just want to say that I was very confused by this because as Katie and Calam are going to the cabin, Katie's like, "Do you really dislike Bill as much as you say, or as much as you act like you do?" And she's like, "Dislike him? No, we're like best friends." And she says something like about the 7-year itch. I'm like, what on earth does that have to do with your relationship? I was like, did I just mishear? Or does that mean something else? Like, I don't know. If that's not something you caught, we can just move on.
But I did hear this, her say 7-year itch, and I meant to Google what is a 7-year itch, and I didn't. Because I was like, that must be just like a period phrase.
It's like when, after 7 years of marriage, you have the urge to cheat on your partner. Is what I learned looking it up.
Well, that is interesting. I don't know what that means.
But anyway, she just does reveal. We know each other really well and we are very good friends. And then, yeah, Bill's playing poker and Danny comes looking for Katie. And he's like, well, I know where Katie is, so I'm going to get there first. So then he goes off, and then they're, like, racing to get to the cabin. And then this is when Clam went off to see some sick person with no shoes on.
Yeah, and so the guy's like, dross.
Classic Clam, always. I don't remember what he says. But
going both, yeah, to helping someone in need or whatever.
Oh, a distress call or something. So they're both in the cabin and they're like, this isn't Calamity's cabin. She's like, yeah, we just touched it up a little bit. Would you like some tea? And then she asks Bill to get some, like, firewood or something.
Yeah, this is, like, a funny move because she tells Bill, can you go leave the cabin? And then Danny immediately gets, like, sexually aggressive and is, like, trying to kiss her. And then she's like, we shouldn't kiss because Calamity loves you. Which is, like, why did you not want Bill here for this? I guess because you just don't want Bill to know that you like Danny more than him. But when Bill comes back with the wood, he sees that there already was wood here and he immediately knows what's going on.
Yeah, because there's, so Danny is like trying to initiate some type of thing with Katie and she's like, oh no, we can't because I love Clam and she loves you. And he's like, what? No, ew. She's like, no, that's not nice. But then she had like a shawl on the firewood and then it gets taken off. Somehow she like trips over it or something and then she's like, oh whoops, I guess I had some, I didn't realize it. And then he's like, oh, like goes to like just walks over to her to grab her and kiss her, and then Bill walks in. Yeah. And then Bill immediately sees that there was firewood already and then it's just like awkward. And then they're like talking about how they both want to take her to the ball, but she's like, what if the four of us go? And they're like, who's the fourth? And she's like, Calam, of course. And they're both like, oh, but she's like ugly.
And then so they draw straws, like, to see who gets to,
yeah,
take.
But she is looking out the window, sees Calam coming back looking beautiful, and is like, Calam, not beautiful, you boys, you don't even know. She's really excited for her to come back, but she fell in the creek and now she's got mud all over her when she does come back. But yeah, so they draw straws and
Danny wins. But then when Calamity comes in, Katie is like, oh, the guys came over to ask us to ask you to the ball. And she's like, they both came? Oh, that's so lovely. Well, I can't go with both of you. And they're like, yeah, we know, we drew straws. And she asks, who won? And Danny's like, well, because Danny won, but he wants to be as mean as possible to Calamity, so he's not going to say he lost. So Bill steps up and says, I won. And she's, like, disappointed. But then she's like, oh, that'll be nice. That'll be fun to go together. And she asks Danny to ask Katie.
Please ask Katie.
And Danny's like, you stupid idiot. Of course I already have. And he kisses her condescendingly on the top of the head.
Yeah.
Then we get that scene that Nick was talking about where they're riding in the carriage to go to the ball. Calamity's wearing a big jacket over her dress, so we don't know how beautiful she is yet. And they sing a song about how they love this land even more than the people who live there.
And then they go into the ball and, Bill, like, walks away and comes back and Calam has taken off her coat and he, like, sees her and then, like, looks, is like, oh, where's Calam? And then he's like, what? That's,
and then he
her?
Goes, awooga! Yeah. And then she's the belle of the ball. Everyone wants to dance with her. Except for freaking Danny. Danny won't put one dance on her dance card, even though he knows she loves him.
He knows, yeah. And then,
so then he pulls Katie outside and is like, hey girl, I love you. And she's like, come on, you know the whole thing with Calamity. And then he kisses her and Calamity sees.
He's like, she can be a bridesmaid. And then they kiss. And then, yeah.
And Calamity's so
Calamity
offended.
Calamity and Bill see, and then yeah,
Calamity Katie's drinking just something from right a glass, away,
but then Calamity... before she leaves, she shoots the glass that Katie has, and but then she and Bill leave, and Katie's just kind of like, she'll be a bridesmaid, huh? I was like, what is this energy? Shouldn't you be, like, upset that your friend is upset because you were just fighting this off for so long for that reason? And now it's happened immediately, but no, I don't know. She's just kind of chilling.
And then, so then she, Calamity she goes to...
goes home with Bill and is just really upset. She's like, oh, Katie, pretending to be my friend, and then... seducing Danny, and Bill's like, you know, he kissed her too, like, this guy's not great, but she's
taking all her clothes off,
and then he just like leaves.
She's shedding this feminine identity that she had adopted to try to get Danny because it's failed, and she's re-donning the identity that feels more authentic to her. And Bill is literally watching this happen, and he's like, oh, God, but okay, sure, I'm still attracted to you. So then Calamity barges in on a show that Katie is doing and says, like, you get out of town. And then Katie does the... I didn't understand what was happening here because Katie's like, give me your gun. I'm going to try to shoot a glass of soda out of your hand. Katie has no... Like, I am afraid that Katie's really going to shoot her in the head because she does not know how to fire a weapon.
It's so really then, crazy because... So, I didn't watch the movie before class, like, the day we were supposed to have watched it. So this was the very first scene of this movie that I saw in class. I was like, what is this movie about? But it seemed very dramatic.
And so, yeah, everyone's, like, cowering in fear because they're like, obviously Katie's such a terrible shot. She could kill any one of us. So they're all hiding under the tables.
And, as soon as she grabs the gun and she's holding it in this crazy way and everyone, like, crouches down and then she's like, hold up your glass. What, are you scared? I'm like... yeah, because you don't know how to shoot a gun. Of course she's scared, but she holds it up, then, and then Bill shoots it.
Bill shoots the glass, and I thought this was to save Calamity's life.
Save Calamity from not getting shot in the face, but...
But he's actually kind of doing it to embarrass her. I think it was
multiple reasons. I think he was also a little freaked out about Katie shooting a gun.
And so Katie doesn't even seem, like, to register that she didn't shoot the gun. She's like, oh, I did it.
She does a little, like, blowing of the barrel, and it's like, oh, and everyone's like, wow, Katie, that was awesome. And then Calamity, like, is crying and storms out, and Bill follows her.
And Bill picks her up and says, get in the stagecoach, and he drives her away.
Yeah.
And she's like, I want to be sad. And he's like, well, you had to learn a lesson. I shot that cup to... teach you that you who, it's says, none of Katie your business to tell you. People
she
who to live.
She beat you twice. She beat you with Danny, and now she's like embarrassed you, and you helped her, and I helped her too because I'm the one that shot it. I was like, I thought she knew that you shot it. There's no way that Katie did that. What are we all talking about? And he's like, you needed to learn. You needed to lose today, or else you would never win again. Who are you to tell people who they can love? If she had left, Danny would just bring her back, and then you would lose them both, and they would both hate you. And then she's like crying, and she's like, "I really loved him," and he was like, "Well, I really loved Katie," and she's like, "You did? Oh, I'm sorry. Let's be friends and commiserate." And then they just kiss.
And then they're like, who are we even talking
like,
about?
She's like, you know, I really wanted to, like, settle down and have kids. And Bill's like, you know, I want to do that too. And then they're just like, well, why not? Do it together. Danny knew. It's great.
And then she sings that song, Secret Love, about how she loves Bill. But maybe she's singing about Katie, or maybe she's singing about her gender identity. Who's to say? She's uncovered something about herself.
It's a super generic song, so you can interpret it in many different ways.
And then she rides back into town and she's like, hey, Peter.
Hey, how's it going, Bob? And everyone's like, screw you. Because everyone's of the last public encounter she had. And then,
no, because for a bit, she's like, wow, everyone's really kind of pissed at me. I hope they get over it. And then Frances explains, Katie just left town because you told her to. And she's like, oh, no, I didn't mean that. So she gallivants off to go get Katie.
But wait, first, Danny just puts the nail in the coffin for how much he sucks. Because she's like, well, I didn't think Katie would actually leave. And then he comes out from inside the theater and is like, of course she did. Because she's not mean like you. And then he, like, reads the letter that she left him. And that's like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I love Kalam and she loves you and I think you love her. And I'm sorry I ever got in between you and whatever. Pretend that Adelaide Adams did come and Katie Brown never existed. And he's like, it's you who should never exist. You suck. And I'm like, oh my God. Shut up. And then she hops on a horse and goes after the coach to bring her back.
She runs kisses into Bill
and he's like, Clam, where are you going? And she turns around and she kisses him and then goes back. And
she also almost like invites him to come, but he doesn't, which is kind of cool.
What?
It seems like she's like, let's go, or whatever, like, I'm going to get her. And I thought that he was going to turn his horse around and join her. But he's just like, that woman's something else, am I right?
And goes back with his boyfriend. I thought she didn't even say anything.
No, she doesn't say. He says, where are you going? And she's like,
yeah, she doesn't respond.
Wait and
she
see. She just
kisses him and then goes. And he's
anyway,
like, that woman.
In a worse movie, he would join her and be part of the heroics at the end.
No,
but instead,
yeah,
it's just
I love that moment because it's just like, yeah, that's cute. You two on horses have a little kiss. And then he's just like, what a crazy girl living her life.
Yeah. And she's mine.
And then
so she rides her
horse.
She's
yelling
as fast
for Rattlesnake to stop, and he doesn't, so that she just hops off and climbs onto the carriage and she's like, why didn't you stop? And he's like, I thought you was engines. And then she gets in and she's like, Katie, I'm getting married. And she's like, oh, that's great. She's like, but I'm gonna be Mrs. Hickok. She's like, you're marrying Bill? She's like, yeah. And they're just both looking at each other with so much love in their eyes, and they hug, and she's like, so where are you going? Back to Chicago or Deadwood? And she's like, Deadwood, always. And they have a big hug, and then Rattlesnake pops upside down into the window of the carriages, goes, females, pure females. And then they have a double wedding. And that's this movie.
Yeah. It is funny, this and Pajama Game being the only two times I've seen Doris Day, because I really have this like butch understanding of her that I don't think is accurate. But
I think
I like
it is.
Is she always kind of a little...
These are also the only two movies that I've seen of hers, but I want to see more, and I get the feeling that this is like...
her vibe?
Yeah.
She was drawn to these kinds of roles?
She did say that this was her favorite movie that she did.
Wow.
And that she was a real tomboy growing up, and she really related to Calamity and had a good time playing her. So
nice.
And because she did a lot of movies with Rock Hudson, which were, like, I don't know, I think kind of like this. Not like that she was playing a tomboy, but that they're like sort of heteronormative, but also sort of like not, you know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I want to watch Pillow Talk.
Okay.
I don't think it's a musical. I'm just saying personally, I would like to watch it.
Well, I want to watch Annie Get Your Gun, which is a musical.
Yeah,
more Howard
I want
Keel.
To do that as well.
I'm happy to see more Howard Keel and more Doris Day.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for exposing me to this movie.
I do stand, even though it's racist, they all are.
And
this is a specific form of racism.
Yeah, it's racist in a different and more pronounced way. But I can't help but it being my favorite of the Golden Age, other than Singing in the Rain, obviously, which is in its own category.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the Howard Keel movies we've seen, far and away, my favorite.
Your favorite Howard Keel performance? Yeah, yeah. And I think I like it more than Pajama. I mean, I do like Pajama Game, weirdly.
I don't.
You know, I don't like that song that goes on forever about how it's a great day at the park, but...
But, yeah.
Anyway. Good movie. Good conversation. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.
Now I shout it from the highest hills, even though the golden daffodils at last, my heart's an open door. Secret love.